What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the show. My name is Adam. I am your host. On today's episode, we've got two main topics. It's going to be a little bit of a shorter show. We've got the funding that PWCC recently got, and then we also have two Herberts that sold for over $1 million. So let's get right into it. Here we go. First topic is going to be the PWCC funding. They got $175 million. To expand their business offering loans. So like the pay, I don't know exactly how to, the loans, I guess, cash advance, I think that's what it would be called. So they got $175 million for cash advance, which I think is pretty interesting. I mean, PWCC has been one of those companies that was on eBay, I didn't agree with all of their business practices on eBay. I mean, I thought that they could have done a better job at policing some of the shill bidding that was going on. Kind of similar to Probstein, to be honest, like where a lot of big auctions seem to be, well, shill bid, I guess that's one way of putting it. Like the auctions, you know, you'd go into the bid history of these auctions and it was pretty clear that the auctions were shilled up. And I guess it's kind of, you know, I don't know. I can't imagine that these companies would be legally allowed to do something like this. Like Probstein, for example, you know, Lameem James, I think I talked about him, or I talked about that account on a different video, but on his page, one of the memes that they always post is that, there's a bunch of Trae Young cards. The Trae Young market is just getting shilled all the time. And so there are a couple Trae Young cards specifically that when they get put up on eBay, which they're consigned through Probstein, they've sold the same flawless and the same like high end RPA like five or six times, all through PWCC, same serial number, same, you know, grading certificate, like all of this stuff is exactly the same. And I think Rick Probstein, who is the owner of the company, the consignment company, you know, he's gone on a bunch of different podcasts and talked about what they're trying to do to fix that. I don't necessarily know what they really can do to fix it. Like, sure, there's maybe IP banning, but it's like if you're in the market of trying to defraud an industry, you probably have some sort of a backup plan, which also it's kind of a complex issue to be honest, shill bidding in general. And that's not really what this is about. I'll just quickly, you know, it's hard to really manage and figure out like how it's actually affecting cards, to be honest, because like, obviously we all know that this one card, the Trae Young card or a couple of Trae Young cards are going to be shill bid, but it's like, how does that affect other cards? I don't know for sure. And there's no way to really pinpoint, to be completely honest, but either way. So PWCC, one of the kind of controversies that they went through was eBay came out and they banned them from the platform, which it really was kind of out of the blue. And I was not a fan of eBay doing that because they didn't do anything with Probstein. Like I said, I don't know if these companies are, I don't think that they could be doing this on purpose from a legal standpoint, because it would be a fraud type of situation. So I obviously don't think that they're doing it like they're the ones conducting this, but like if eBay is going to kick off PWCC, they need to keep it kind of, I'm not gonna say keep it 100, I don't know if that's, I don't think that's a saying, or it is a saying, I don't think it necessarily applies here, but they need to keep it consistent when it comes to their policies and what they're doing about managing the shill bidding that goes on the platform. So, like I said, PWCC, they launched a vault. They've been doing a lot of premier auctions, monthly, weekly auctions. I mean, their transition, like someone coming into sports cards may not even realize, honestly, that they were on eBay before. Like it was Probstein and PWCC were the two biggest consigners on that platform. And now PWCC built their own platform, which is, it's pretty impressive to be completely honest, like how many high end cards they're able to get. And now they're trying to bring in another piece of business, another kind of way, I guess, I don't know what the back end's going to look like with like fees and, you know, obviously if it's a cash advance, that means that there's going to be interest on the loans that they're giving out. But overall, I think it's really impressive that we're seeing another company within the sports card industry getting funding, you know, of $175 million to start this business venture. I guess it'll be interesting to see sort of how they approach the marketing around this. I think InvestCard is also another company that does something similar. And to be completely honest, like, I don't love the cash advance loan system of sports cards because, you know, there's so much volatility and it feels like if you're getting into it, you know, it can be pretty dangerous. I do think that if somebody is getting into that, they know the risks that they're taking. But at the same time, like, you know, somebody getting in that may, you know, maybe they have some sort of funding themselves. Like, they're not, you know, it's maybe not the average person. Maybe it's like the above average person that's coming in with money to buy sports cards. If they're looking at it and saying, you know, we want to buy this card, but we don't want to spend the money, they may do this. Also, I just think, you know, the concept and system may or may not help the industry, because if you're getting a cash advance for cards, then that means you're definitely going to be selling it. You're definitely going to be selling the card at some point. And I don't necessarily know if that's a good thing, because if, you know, no collector, and I think everybody is a little bit of a collector in this industry, no collector is going to come in and use this system. Like, maybe they're looking at it and saying, if you're a collector or something, or maybe if you are like a high-end collector or something along those lines, like, maybe you're looking at this and saying, I want to buy a card that's $1 million. Let's just say, I'm going to make these numbers up, and you have $500,000 or $750,000. But you know, over the course of the year, you're going to be making somehow that $250,000, but the card that you want is a rare card that never really comes up. Then, you know, maybe that could be a reason why you would do it if you were a collector. But I think for the most part, like, if there's going to be interest on these types of loans, if there's going to be any type of, you know, back end money that's going to have to be paid forward along with the money that you're getting for the loan, I think it's something that could be pretty dangerous when it comes to, you know, people buying into cards. But we'll see. I think it's going to be, you know, like I said, I think PWCC, the platform that they built, has been, it's extremely impressive. The cards that they've been able to sell have been impressive. Like, I would say in a very short amount of time, PWCC has built sort of a repertoire for selling big cards similar to what Golden Auctions has done. I think Golden Auctions right now is probably number one. I think Heritage Auctions, to be completely honest, is probably number two. And then I would say that PWCC is probably in that like 3 to 5 range. Like, I'm sure, you know, there are other auction houses. There's like Leland Auctions, there's Memory Lane Auctions. Alt, I think, is another one that's kind of come into the fray a little bit. But I think the vaulting for PWCC and the auction house that they've been able to build is really impressive, to be completely honest. So I am going to be definitely interested to see sort of if this investment that's made ends up, if it ends up being a good thing. I think it's going to be, I mean, I think it's obviously going to be good for PWCC, but it's going to be interesting to see if, like, people that are buying the cards with these funds, like, how quickly something like this, like, at what point, like, does the, like, I would wonder how long they think that they can go through these funds till they get to a point where there isn't really anything left. So, you know, I've got, PWCC is obviously a company that I have my eye on, and, you know, this new kind of business strategy, I think, is going to be very interesting. So we'll see how it goes. All right. NFL games have probably started. Let's just check the fantasy team really quick before we get into the next topic. Let's see. My fantasy team, I'm in a league with some people from Collectible, which is fun. Jonathan Taylor, 2 points so far. He was my number one pick. I had the second pick in that draft. Lamar Jackson, 0.7 so far. Eh, fine. I mean, I only have two players going, so at least so far. I think a couple, no real touchdowns yet in any of the games, it looks like. NFL scores. Sorry, I'm not Mr. Sunshine. I've got that song stuck in my head. Yeah, not really too many scores yet. It looks like Swift maybe has a touchdown. Either way. But as we are talking about, as we're talking about the NFL, something that I've talked about on previous shows is Prize Picks. So Prize Picks is like a combination of daily fantasy with player props. It's a ton of fun. Here are the two that I have for my lineup this week. Depending on when you're watching this, this may or may not have already happened, but we'll see. I did interceptions for these quarterbacks because I thought that, well, actually, so I used another website called NumberFire, and that's like a projections, and I was looking at the interceptions, which I think is an interesting one. I think it's an interesting concept that they have on there. So I did these three. And one of the great things about Prize Picks is that you can choose the payout method, essentially. So if you put like $2 or $5, you can choose if you want to do a power play, which is if you get all three or four or five or how many you pick. If you get all of them right, the payout bonus continues to increase. So with three, it's a 5x bonus. So like if you put in, let's just say $3, you would make 15 essentially. So, but the other good thing about that is that you can do something called a flex play. So the flex play gives you a little bit of flexibility when it comes to how many of the picks you can get right and how many you can get wrong. If you get all three, since you picked the flex play, the percentage is going to be lower than if you did the power play, because with the power play, if you get any wrong, you're out. But with the flex, if you get two of the three, or I think it's three of the four, you can get one or two wrong and still get a payout, which is, you know, a lot different than like if you're betting or if you're playing fantasy sports, like you can't really do that. So here are the few that I've tried. I'm going to put in the comments the link for my Prize Picks. If you are interested in joining Prize Picks, they are doing a 100% deposit match up to $100, and by there's the link. It's in the chat right now. Also put in the description for this episode. But if you do that and you deposit, you don't have to deposit $100. I mean, it's up to $100, so you can do $25 and you get an extra $25. If you deposit today, or if you use my link, you will get your match, and then you also help the show a little bit. So that's all I've got for Prize Picks. So we're going to move on to the second and final topic. It's kind of a combination topic here because there were two Justin Herbert cards that sold recently. I think that this was also a very interesting strategy for one of the cards to sell and then for the other card to end a couple days later. I would say it had to have been coordinated. There's no way two huge one-of-ones like this sell all at the same time without there being some sort of coordination. I would say the goal of it was probably to increase the value of the National Treasures. That card was pulled at the National last year and then sold, I believe, for $550,000. And now it's sold for $1.8 million. Then the cards we're talking about, the one of one Black Finite Prism, Justin Herbert, sold for $1.1 million, which, you know, these types of cards, I think going into this season, the thing that I've noticed, honestly, with the market for football over the past couple of years has been that once the season's kind of progressed a little bit, that's when cards have kind of dropped a little bit. Like, it's almost the opposite, where the off season leading right up to the season, that's when you're going to see football cards increase. And then right before the season, that's when I think it's a good time to sell, to be completely honest. And I think over the next few weeks, you're going to see kind of, you know, injuries will happen, players will sort of change roles potentially, and things will change within sort of within certain teams. So I think with these cards specifically, I don't necessarily think that they'll go down in value, but I think like a Prism Justin Herbert, for example, like a PSA 10, probably goes down in value a little bit throughout the season. These cards are obviously more rare, so they're not going to be selling as often. And yeah, like I said, I think that with these cards specifically, the Prism card probably was planned on being sold around the same time, if maybe the person wasn't getting the price that they wanted for the National Treasures, because if I'm being honest here, I think the National Treasures is priced correctly, but I think maybe the Prism card is priced a little bit higher than it should have been. And that's based off of the sale of the National Treasures, because the National Treasures 1/1 RPA is like the holy grail of a player's cards for football. It's like it's the Bowman Chrome Super Fractor 1/1 for football, basically. So the fact that it sells for 1.8, and then the Prism 1/1 sells for 1.1, I'd say the person who paid for that Prism card probably overpaid a little bit. Another thing that I think about when I'm looking at these cards in general is, like, when you have a big 1/1, like when you have this 1/1 Prism card sell, realistically, the opportunity to buy that card doesn't come around as often as maybe the person who's willing to buy it. Like, the person who's willing to spend $1.1 million on it, that's probably more like a $750,000 to $800,000 card. But what ends up happening is that it doesn't sell so often. So, like, there's an opportunity cost when it comes to that. Like, sure, the person who is, and I think it's kind of with all of these big cards in general, anybody who's willing to spend this type of money on a card is probably willing to spend a little bit extra to get the card if they know that potentially it's going to be a lot harder for them to buy in the future. Like I said, I think the Prism card is probably more like a $750,000 to $800,000 card. But like I said, a person who is willing to spend $800,000 on a sports card is probably willing to spend an extra $300 to get this type of card that they know isn't going to be selling. And I know it sounds probably pretty crazy to throw these numbers out there, but at the same time, like, that's coming from a person who doesn't have, you know, $1 million or wouldn't even fathom being able to buy a card like this. So that's just my thought process when I'm looking at why the Prism sold for 1.1 when the National Treasures only sold for, and I always say it's 1.8, only 1.8. But with that 1.8, that kind of sets the market when it comes to the rest of those cards. I saw another tweet that the 1/1 Joe Burrow was actually pulled, and actually pretty interesting. It was a redemption. So as maybe you know, maybe you don't know, a lot of Joe Burrow's autographs and RPAs are redemptions. In Contenders, all of his cards are redemptions, which I think that means that the deadline for when you have to send in the cards, it has to be coming up, I would imagine. But at the same time, here's the thing with redemptions, I think it's kind of dumb that there are expiration dates. Like, I get that they sort of have to put that on there probably for some sort of legal reason. But if, like, they have the card, or they have the cards with the autographs, they should never be able to, there should never be an expiration date. They also need to, I think it's with Panini and Topps, they need a database of all cards that are redemptions, and they need to be more transparent when it comes to which cards are redemptions. It seems, in my opinion, it's a little bit ridiculous that they would put out Contenders and not announce that, and not have it be front page sports card news that these cards are redemptions, because people started pulling the Joe Burrow Contenders autographs and they're all redemptions, which from what I heard, he sent the cards in, but he sent them in too late. So if you send those redemptions in, you'll get the card back because all of those autographs are in. He just sent them in too late to get in the product. But I heard it was like a week or two late. So like, it kind of stinks that he couldn't get those cards. So, you know, and I think what ends up happening is down the road that 2020, the 2020 Contenders product, I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe it's going to lose value once those redemptions are expired, because that, and or maybe not, because maybe, you know, if Panini comes out and says, you know, maybe they have to put that expiration date, because if they don't have the card, they have to figure something else out. But if they have the cards, the expiration date should be invalid. Like, you should be able to send it in whenever the expiration date after it. And I get that they can't hold the cards, but it's like, you know, I don't know, figure it out, because they have to. They can't just not send the cards if they have them. But at the same time, like, I don't know how many redemptions they're getting at a time. I don't know. It's just, like I said, redemptions to me has been something that I wish that they could fix and get rid of almost, because I don't know. It just seems like such a bummer if you're pulling a redemption and it's like you never even know if the player signed or not. With Burrow, I think it was announced that he did sign. He did send the cards back. But that 1/1 Burrow National Treasures, I think it was a platinum, I think is what it is. That one did sell. I also don't love that there are multiple 1/1 National Treasures cards. Like, I wish, I get that they have to sort of do it to, you know, increase the amount of products they can make. But if it's a 1/1, they should just do 1/1 across the whole board. Like, if you have 3 1/1s, you could take those three, you could take 2 of them out, and I don't think it would really affect how much product you can make. Like, I think you just decrease the odds or do whatever you need to do, but it's like, just make the 1/1 the only one there is. And same with the, like, number to 5s, and I think number to 25s, there's, like, red, and then there's, like, green, and there's, like, a bunch of different ones that, like I said, I just wish that if it's a 1/1, I wish there was only 1 1/1 in every product and not, like, I think I saw some, actually, I think it might have been Eric Whiteback, to be completely honest. He tweeted about how there are, like, 150 1/1 Trevor Lawrences, and I think the number might, I don't remember the exact number, but I remember he said a number, and I was like, wow. I mean, it's not surprising, but at the same time, like, there are so many of them that it's like, how can you even really put value on one? And same with the prism. Like, there's black finite, and then there's black. So it's like, I think there's 2 of these 1/1 prism cards. I don't know. We'll see. I don't think we see these cards sell anytime soon. Like, if Herbert wins the Super Bowl in the next year or two, I think there's a chance that we may see some of these cards hit the market. But realistically, these cards are probably not going to be sold again anytime soon. So these people, somebody who bought the one of the National Treasures, the 1.8, they're probably keeping that somewhere in a safety deposit box. Same with the $1.1 million Prism card. They're probably not going to sell them, probably going to keep them. I mean, maybe they'll be at the National. I think that would be really cool. A cool way to display these cards. I think that there should probably be like a sports card museum, like a, I even think that PWCC or like one of these companies that has like vaults, they should almost have the cards in a museum on display. I think that would be really cool if they could do that. Like, eBay could do it too. I mean, an eBay museum would be really interesting with, you know, if, I don't know. I mean, it could even be like they pay you to put their cards on display or something along those lines. I think that would be really cool. But yeah, that's pretty much all I've got for today's episode. I guess we'll go back to the pre-show again. I need to sort of figure out how to maybe change this. But that's all I've got for today's episode. So I want to thank everybody for coming in. Make sure you go like, subscribe on YouTube. Check out, so Sports Card Intel on any podcast network, but mainly Spotify and Apple. Check the podcast out there. All these episodes end up going up as full-length podcasts. The clips get cut up into shorter clips, which I post for YouTube videos. I think you kind of probably all know the drill at this point. That's all I've got. Thank you all for watching, and I will see you in the next one.